You're listening to Mind Your Own Business. Hi, I'm Scott Sullivan, your host. Mind Your Own Business is a weekly show that we do talking to some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs, helping you to be better at being a business professional by learning from all of the experience that these entrepreneurs and CEOs bring from all around the world. Exclusively here on Inspired News Radio. And now it's time for Mind Your Own Business.
Well, it's a great day right here at Inspired News Radio. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mind Your Own Business. Yes, it's another episode of Mind Your Own Business. And yes, we have for you fantastic CEOs, entrepreneurs, people that every single week help you be better at what you do. And this week is absolutely no exception. I am so excited. Finally, I get this guy on my show. We have been talking for, gosh, I can't even begin to tell you how many months now we've been talking. This man is super busy, everything that's going on. And the reason why is because this is the guy with the money. This is the money man. And I am so excited. If you just recently listened to a last couple of shows, we've been kind of have a theme going on. We're talking about expanding your business. How do you get bigger? How do you grow? What are the things that are going on? And this fits right in just like a hand in a glove. If you don't know already, I am talking about the CEO and founder of the CIG Capital Group. This gentleman knows everything that you need to know about getting funding for your projects that are out there right now. And of course, I'm talking about Charles Carey. Charles, welcome. Welcome to Mind Your Own Business. How are you today and how's life?
Oh, thank you, Scott. Doing great. It's beautiful outside. There's fresh air. The sun is shining and it's summertime. So doing great.
You can't beat that. That's for sure. Now, you're calling in today from up in the north part of the world. You're up in Lansing, Michigan, and you're at the headquarters location from the CIG Group, right?
That is correct.
Well, how is life in Michigan right now? I know that, you know, we're kind of in at this time of this recording, we're kind of in the throes of everything going on with this pandemic in 2020, the year that just won't stop giving us bad news. So how are things in Lansing, Michigan, and you and your family, everybody healthy and okay?
Doing great. You know, it's one thing I believe is you can be in the middle of a storm and enjoy it and listen to the thunder, listen to the lightning, or see the lightning and the beautiful sound of the rain. Or you can sit there and whine and get scared that the tornado's gonna hit your house. So in my mind, I'm the guy that says, you know what, we're in the middle of this COVID. It's stressful, it's frustrating. You have to wear a mask everywhere you go. Negative news always on about, you know, feeling bad for what's going on in society. But I look at it as a positive that things are good. There's a lot of opportunity. And so I try to keep it positive. My family does. And I love our office because we have that culture of looking at the positive side of things, not the negative.
That's great. So that reminds me of a great little story I tell people all the time. I said, you know, you ask the question, is the glass half empty or is the glass half full? And you can, you know, either side of that coin, it doesn't really matter. But what I like to say is you talk to a sales guy and he'll say, can I talk to you about ice? Because it doesn't matter if it's half full or empty. What you need is you need some ice cubes on that. So let me sell you some ice.
Gotta love that.
Well, anyway, thank you so much for being here today. I am so appreciative. I know you are absolutely just, you're swamped. I mean, every time I talk to you, every time that we reach out, you have got such big, huge, giant deals that are going on and they all take, you know, your attention. And I appreciate you finally making time for us to be a guest on Mind Your Own Business. So the way this process works, all my listeners know it. We always talk about the origin story. How did you get your feet on this path? I mean, you and I have known each other. We share a passion for a few things, flying, of course, you know, being a private pilot and all the things that we've talked about. There are a lot of things, but how did you, you know, wake up one morning and say, you know, what I really want to do is I want to figure out how money makes money, or I want to, you know, so kind of give us a little background about where you came from and how you got to where you are today. And then let's take it from there. But tell our listeners, you know, what put your feet on this path? What was your influence?
Well, thank you, Scott. I can tell you this, you know, the two words that come to my mind every time this is asked is problem solver. I love solving problems. If it's as simple as at home and the sink isn't working and we got to figure it out and solve it, right? It's that kind of mindset that got me into the financing, the finance world. Because my background, I'm a serial entrepreneur. I'm not a finance major. Matter of fact, I always have the saying, if I'm the smartest guy in the room, I better leave that room. So,
yeah, okay.
So for me, I'm not the smartest guy in finance, but what I like to do is I like to see how I can help solve problems, especially in business. So what happened is a while back, you know, I was some of my history is also business consulting and how to scale businesses and help businesses when they're, you know, at that point of I have 10 locations. How do I get to 50 or 100 locations? How can I take my business to the next level? So that was a lot of what I love about business is watching growth, right? So that said, I ran into the financial arena with businesses that were smaller funding company businesses out there in the short-term type business loans. And so these small business loans, short-term loans is when I first got into this. And I was consulting some pretty large groups out there, you know, funding over a billion a year. And we just saw how much of a mess they were, because what we find is, you know, when we go and investigate on a business, if they're successful or not successful, we try to find why are they not successful, of course, and then why they're successful, help expand on that, right? But you got to find the holes first, the problems in the business. And I've consulted a lot of business models, a lot of products, and larger industries as well, or larger companies as well. And what I find, it's crazy, is the finance world is wildly bad. No, I don't mean to be mean to other competitors out there, but they're, I want to call it like government model. Like they're so blockheaded, focused only on risk. They get away from the whole metric of a business model, right? When you're funding a business, or a project, you got to look at more metrics than just what your underwriting team has developed on risk. And that's where we came in. We found a lot of businesses not only have their models focused so narrowly and only focusing on, you know, certain areas, they missed out so much more on their business. Now, that said, they were a mess also on their business modeling. So we found out that that wasn't working well as well. So we helped with a lot of that. And I can tell you this, that got me, because what I found is it's what I look for: recession resistant industry, you know, making money on money or being the money business. It's sustainable because every business always needs it and it's not going to go anywhere. Currency's there no matter how you're using it and what it's for. So we found the things that I look for in a great product. So money was a great product, but what I found is there was a lack of solutions on a lot of areas of issues. So that said, that's where I started at. I got into the small business arena, small business loans initially, because, you know, that, you know, I see that's where a real strong need was at initially. And then I progressed and got into the level I'm at now. And that was where the large infrastructure, large project funding deals. So but yeah, that's where it started. I saw the problem in the industry. I'm a problem solver. So it caused me to really dive in and, you know, solve problems. And when you're solving problems, you see the solutions and they don't always listen to you, because of like, this is what they'll say. These big multi-billion dollar funds that we were talking to and consulting. Well, we understand that, but we're making a lot of money. I said, yes. But you can make more money, you can expand, and you can help more people, and it's not going to be more risky, and you can multiply your business model. And I was writing a book right now, and one of the things I said, and it's just funny, is if you can get the three concepts down, and this is what we were teaching them, as leverage, assets, and having the ability to de-risk everything in the project. That means maybe ownership, maybe adding some additional parts to it to help them be more successful, such as support services. No lender in the world thinks about that, right? Why would we give them support services? We're not in their industry. Well, there's three or four firms you could retain to help them, right? So these are the things that we found and we saw how we could solve. So hopefully that answers your question.
Well, fantastic. I have a whole bunch of stuff to unpack out of that. That's fantastic. So, my listeners are usually entrepreneurs. They're all, you know, folks that are either own a business or they're trying to start a business or they're in some, you know, some escalation or some place along this time continuum of either being an entrepreneur or being a very successful business owner. So they're somewhere along that timeline. And what I want to do today, since we have this expert, since we have you here, I want to talk a little bit about what are the things that small to medium-sized business owners need to know. You mentioned it, you touched on it. When you're at 10 locations, you want to go to 50, right? How do you manage that growth through investment? And what does the actual investment mean? I mean, so my dad, who was a serial entrepreneur his whole life also, used to say to me, he taught me very early on that money is nothing more than just a tool. It's a pencil or an ink pen or a hammer. It doesn't know if it's a lot or a little. The money doesn't know anything. The money is just there. And the beautiful part about it is if you have a dollar, you can probably borrow five against it. So there was a lot of information that my dad taught me about the use of money and, you know, the seventh wonder of the world of compound interest, right? Those kind of things. So I want to leave that behind in the stream. I want to leave those nuggets behind and say, so if I'm listening to this show and I'm an entrepreneur and I have a business that's worth X, I want you to kind of walk us through, you know, some of the telltale signs. What are the things we should be looking at? You know, what does my business have to be worth? What is a debt to equity ratio of my company? Is it worth giving up part ownership? Is it worth, you know, the old analogy of I'd rather own 100% of a grape than 1% of a watermelon or whatever that is. I mean, I just want to walk through some of that so that we can leave some nuggets behind for our listeners. So walk me through some of those things that you're finding in the industry right now.
Scott, I love to hear about your dad, and he's a smart man. I can tell you that because it is a tool. And I've always said that too, because before I became in the position I'm at now, I was a bootstrapper. And what I realized is I wish I had that tool more often. You know, I mean, exactly. I was successful, but I could have been a lot more successful. There's two parts of what your question and some of the comments in there that I love. That was the first one. Like when your dad said that, like learning how to utilize it and having that tool give you the things you need to be successful. So what I'd like to say is, number one, you know, being an expert at managing the actual money itself almost never happens for any business owner. They're never the expert at managing money. That's not their business, right?
Right. That's not what their business is. Right. I agree with you. Yes.
And that I learned later in life because there were situations because I never borrowed money. I have this, you know, the Ramsey model. Oh, debt is bad. Never accept debt. Debt is so bad. Never do it.
Oh, you know, man.
Debt free, blah, blah, you know. And by the way, most of your listeners, I want to say this, don't get too far away from that. But what I like to say is this, I use debt for my benefit. I like debt where I can leverage, where it owes me and I control it. Most people get debt because they want to get fancy and fun things, right? So that is something
you
where
mean I shouldn't borrow money to drive a Bentley? Come on.
I love that. Great point. What we realize is that debt can be used in a good way. And what I've realized is that when I struggled in my business in the past, the business is being a serial entrepreneur, you run into something we call failures. Some failures there were teach you a lot of things, or you can be insane and try to do the same thing over and over and get a different result. And so what I realized is that I have to have this mindset of what can I go in and do something and do it better. So what I realized in consulting these actual funders, that, wow, they're wise on the debt side. They're utilizing debt because none of those funders had the money. They never had the currency. Banks never have money. It's never their money. They're indebted to the depository side, to the people that deposit their money. Banks are always indebted to the Fed. They're always indebted somewhere, right? But we don't think of that in society. Well, the bank has the money, right? Isn't the saying we have? The bank has the money. They don't have the money. They're on debt. So when you learn about our monetary system, you learn how to handle money and be a good steward of money, like your dad said. Learn to use the tool, right? If you learn to use the tool, it will work for you. So for us as a firm, that's one thing I believe you really need to get down as an entrepreneur. You need to learn how to manage money successfully. Now, when I say that, it doesn't mean go invest in the stock market. That's very risky. That's risky. And I don't invest in the stock market. I control my risk. That might sound crazy to people. I'm not saying not to invest in the stock market. I'm saying I'm in the position where I'm dealing with multi-billion dollar transactions. I control the risk, but at the same time, I'm still in a position that there's money involved, that there needs to be debt involved, right? So that'd be the first thing. The second thing I would say in that, which is really good, the later part of what you brought up, you know, if you can learn, I love that watermelon example, and not enough entrepreneurs get this. If you can learn that you could scale up at a higher amount, a larger amount, if you have a team or if you have a group that has your back. So that brings me back to my company. SIG Capital, we're 100% funder. We fund 100% of the project. So let me give you an example. I have a group that they asked for $500 million for a biodiesel project. Well, we realized they have some really strong offtake agreements with some, you know, Fortune 50 groups that we saw, well, we can leverage future revenue, right? We can go in and I can do, instead of 500 million, I can do 2 billion for this project. So we proposed to the project owner, this is going to be 100% debt, no equity. How about you give us 50% equity and we build 5 of these plants because the product is needed, right? So instead of a $500 million loan, it goes to a $2 billion. And not only a $2 billion project, now there's 5 other opportunities behind it to do $10 billion. And then you get to the project owner. He didn't stop to even think. He's, I love it. I'm in. He didn't say, I go back to my board. He didn't go back and say, oh, I got to really, you know, figure out this is going to work for us. He knew right then, because he's really successful. And he has a great track record of showing that he's successful. And when we proposed it to him, I'll give you 50% equity all day, because instead of 10 billion or just 500 million, he ended up at 10 billion because he brought us in as a partner to scale up the business model. So, you know, that is the second part. Don't look at how much you're losing today. Look at how much you're gaining tomorrow.
Dude, that's great advice. That's great advice. Let's put that on a t-shirt. Okay, so that makes perfect sense. So then there's also that question is, that leads us to the next question, and that is, when is a company just, you know, best prepared to take that infusion of capital? When, I mean, because if you look at a VC, and I'm not trying to cast disparagements on anything, but if you look at a venture capitalist or you look at, you know, angel investors or risk, you know, high risk, we have statistics that show what's the likelihood of this, of any company surviving. And then we have even deeper statistics that say within this industry, we all know what a car is worth 3 years after you drive it off the lot and yeah, you have 100,000 miles on it. I mean, those numbers are there. We have decades worth of data. So there's not much risk because it's a known entity, right? So, right. We have that, but when should a company actually look at that growth through investment? Is it, you know, if you're looking at a VC and they want 50% of your company for a tenth of what the value is today, that's a higher risk than, you know, where should I start thinking about this where I don't have to give up 100% of my company for a small capital investment. What's that formula, or how have you seen that happen?
Well, as a scale, I won't say expert, but as my background in consulting and scaling businesses and business models, I look at it as a couple ways to do it, right? One is, you could hedge your current business and say, you find the right relationship and they want 50% of your company and the future companies are building. You know, what I try to do is say, well, what if I allow you to lead my current business and structure it a little differently? So I think the problem is when you go in as a business owner, you're not in the driver's seat. You feel like you're pitching to them to sell them on what you need, but a lot of times they're going to take control and say, this is what I'm going to give you, right? Versus, well, what if we work together where it still meets your risk, of your PPM or your fund, Mr. Venture Capitalist? I'll give you this, and I'll de-risk you by doing something such as let you have a hedge or have a lien against my current company. Because on a scaling business model, you should be looking at the future businesses. It's kind of like the franchisor model. Like, hey, this is two business models. If you think about it, we have shown past the startup phase, we've already de-risked the proof of concept, right? We have shown that our three locations or our one location is sustainable. What I need you to do is, I don't want to give you my current location. I want to give you the future business. Now, the upside is, we could ask for 5%, 10%. If I was in their shoes, because it's higher risk more than anything is scaling up. You can get proof of concept. The next stage is the responsibility of it's a whole different business model, and people don't get this. So when you want to scale up, you have to realize you're going to need more help, or you have to do things differently. You're not going to do the same thing you did at each location because you're not managing only 20 people. Now you have 10 locations, you're managing 200 people. You have new positions created. You have new processes. You have new ways of doing business because you have new territories, new locations. So what I like to suggest is be creative. Don't go into the business meeting or the pitch that you're asking for money on and just have it narrow thinking. Think of your upside and also look at the shoes of the venture capitalists, because they're saying, yeah, this is my risk here issue here. My issue is I don't want to give up 50%. I mean, I need to get 50% to protect myself, but the venture capitalist, the business was, I don't want to give up 50% of my business. I worked hard building this, right? So in that case, we want a fair deal. Don't allow yourself to be taken advantage of, because you don't need them, you want them. Kind of like what your dad taught you. It's a tool. There's a lot of drills you can go buy, right? And so since you're already successful, I would be patient in finding the right relationship and the right group if you can't work out a creative deal. So I guess my advice more than anything is don't be headstrong, but also don't be taken advantage of. Those are the two things I would look at. Don't allow venture capitalists, because they will, or they will come in, or even an equity investor, they will try to hedge your business. Everyone has seen Shark Tank.
We've all seen Shark Tank.
Yeah. I mean, you get people out really going. Like for us, I believe in relationships. And for us, when we fund a project, I'm not looking for a one-off. I'm looking for a consistent long-term relationship. So when we go in it, we're not trying to over-hedge and dominate the project. Like some deals, we deserve 80-90% because we're basically running the business, because with our business model, it's still unique. We offer support services for marketing, for business management, for everything you can think of running a business, executive growth, mentorship programs, all within our organization. We do that. So it's a little different. And sometimes we could build a whole team when someone has a great product. But we don't go and leverage them and take 99% of the business. We want them to love their business model, and we'll go and do it 50 because we don't want to run the business either, but we want to help them build it from day one.
Plus, it mitigates your risk. I mean, if you're, that's why you were talking about de-risking and the support services. If I can offer you the support services to make sure your business is running, because I get zero return on my investment if your company goes out of business, right? So if I can keep you up and running and sustainable, plus, let's talk a little bit about, you know, we still haven't answered the question of, you know, for every year you're in business, the risk goes down. For every dollar of sales, what are the key milestones? What are the KPIs, the performance indicators that we should be telling our listeners? Because one of the things is if you have zero, if you're what we call pre-revenue, which I hate that term, but if you haven't made any sales yet, the risk is much greater. If I've done $1 million in sales over a 2-year period and I've demonstrated growth over those 2 years, that risk plummets. I mean, plummets, right? So, right. So what are the things that our listeners should be focusing on? Increased sales, better operations. They need a really good streamlined organization now, because scaling just throws a monkey wrench into everything.
You know, I think what you just said is important, because a lot of people don't realize they're so focused on the product and their business and running the business itself. What you just mentioned is putting themselves in a position where it's really attractive. I think when I say attractive, you go through these exact numbers of showing your success, your growth rates. You know, you can, if you lay it, if, and you're, we're talking about raising money, right? For expansion or right, raising money to just build that product up and expand the product.
Yeah, or open manufacturing or be vertically integrated. I mean, there's all kinds of things we could do.
Exactly. And so what I would say is the more you're prepared when you're going out to the marketplace to bring in the additional capital, the more respected you're going to be. See, that's actually where we see a lot of failure. You know, you have a great product and the entrepreneur and the business owner is running the business, but they're not preparing themselves for the growth. And what I mean by prepared, you have all these studies that you've already proven, like you are the proof of concept, not just verbally telling them, but putting it as you're really starting a new business. Like when you go start a new business, you're trying to raise capital, you put together these great marketing plans, business plans, you put together this, you know, the feasibility studies if needed, whatever, right? You need to do that again as you're building your business. But now you have all that concrete information. You have the proof of concept that tells that investor you're prepared to go to the next level. You're ready to, you know, grow the current business model because you put all your ducks in a row. What I find through my history is when you go in, they say we're ready to grow. They just give you a verbal conversation. Oh, here's our products. Here we go. Here's our business plan. And they have a little bit, they have a teaser they give you, but it's like, you need to act like you're starting over because it is another business model. You're expanding your current business and structure. Now, is it duplicating what you're doing? Yes, it's a lot easier on the product side. On the business modeling side, it isn't. You need to show them what your plans are and how it's going to grow and the studies for those cities that you're going to, or the studies that show the demand of your product if you're going to manufacturing, whatever it is. So I think that is an important ingredient. Prepare before you present. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't do that. They have a lot of ideas. They might put some things together, but they don't put as much effort in as now they feel confident that, oh, my product's great. Everyone's going to love it. Like I love it. No one will love your product as much as you love it as an entrepreneur. It just doesn't happen that way.
That's true. That's exactly what we had a guest on the show a few weeks ago where he talked about passion turns into profit. Nobody is going to be able. I love this phrase. He said, if you're the founder, if you're the owner, if you have all the passion, he said, the first few sales, you're going to set yourself on fire and people are going to come and watch. Right. So but nobody else is going to do that. Right. You're the owner. You're the guy or the gal who built this. No one can be more passionate about your business than you. And one of the things he said was, I love is that you know, the definition of an entrepreneur is a person who will give up a 40-hour a week job to work 80 hours for exactly the same money.
Exactly.
Because that's their passion, and other people won't do that. So what happens is during the expansion or during the scaling, as we talk about it, is that finding that next, you have to realize this is going to be at least a whole step down from you, the founder. The founder is going to have the most passion. And then the person that you've got in your that next key role is going to be a full step down because they're not going to have that passion. And no amount of equity or ownership or, you know, they weren't the ones that sat up at night and thought about it and doodled on a back of an envelope and figured it all out. So I agree with you. I understand where you're coming from. So that level of enthusiasm and preparation has to be there when you're looking to expand. Now, let's talk about expansion with investment through acquisition. Let's talk about using the money to actually go out and buy your competition or to buy existing businesses. Is that a business model that you support, or is that something that, you know, you think has a little more risk involved?
No, I think it's, you know, I'm big on, you know, when it comes to the right deal, not necessarily the model, but the right deal. And also, so for me, I do acquisitions now. I do it all the time where we'll go in, we're going to do a new project, but to diversify our risk, we're going to bring on some current projects as long as we can mesh everything together, because M&A business is real tricky, right? And I'm going to say a little history on the M&A business that I like about it. You kind of look at the AT&T model. Remember when the guys back then were, you know, literally buying up companies. It was that, my mind just went blank, but it was the four-letter acronym that bought AT&T when it was at its lowest. This just to get the brand, right? They bought AT&T back before it was a cell company, before, you know, back in, and it's more maybe in the early 2000s. When they acquire, SBLC. I'm thinking SBC. You know what I'm talking about, right? So,
well, SBC was the Southern Bell Corporation, SBC, yeah. And then Lucent, and then it was Western Electric. There were a lot of little spinoffs. So what we used to call the Baby Bells. They used to be the Baby Bells. You know, Southern SBC was Southern Bell Corporation, and then Western Electric was down in Georgia. They were headquartered out of Georgia. And then there was also a company called Lucent that jumped in right in the middle of all that from a technology standpoint.
Right. And the point I was making is the SBC, when they bought AT&T, think about it. In 2005, I think it was, right? They bought them. And they didn't spend, you know, 150 to 300 billion on them. They spent like 15, 20 billion on them. And it wasn't there yet, but they had a plan to continue to buy. So if you're acquiring business to make it stronger and to diversify your portfolio, it's great. So they can work good. Now, what I like to look at as what we do is we blend that in. So as long as the companies have culturally a good fit, their adoption rate is going to be good for technology, whatever the product is, right? I think acquisitions can work, but they have to blend within your vision and your business model. Because sometimes you buy them for different purposes. Sometimes you buy it just so you don't have any competition, or you can meet the competition, sticking to the wireless business or the cellular business. You see the merger between Sprint and T-Mobile. Well, they wanted to still keep up with the two other big conglomerates, right? So that said, my point in that is I think acquisitions are great, because what it can do for a group like us, say we're doing a new project, or say we have an existing business that's successful, we would look at that new acquisition or a new project with an acquisition can help us get a start for either, if it's your existing, more growth while you're still expanding your current business, but it also can give you the ability to sustain your revenues as when it comes to dealing with risk. What I mean by that is, okay, now what you just did is you just got a whole new market somewhere for some, you know, whatever it was specifically. You're able to take that market and then add to whatever your expansion plans were. So I believe by merging that type of model together, where you're not doing it just from the ground zero as expansion, is not a bad idea. But again, the problem is, you know, what the cost is. That's the downside. What's the cost of buying that acquisition? And is it worth that acquisition based on the upside and the projections? You know, so that's my opinion. I'm not in the acquisition business in most of our projects, but we have some we merge in there because we felt like it was a niche industry. So let me give you another example. and I don't get too tangent on this, but this is a good one. We have a project in your back and you're in solar, right? We were talking about because how large the project is going to be. We believe that it was a good idea to go in and maybe buy some manufacturers because we have some large power companies that we're getting some offtake agreements with, which is one of my credit enhancements I can fund off. And this is, you know, north of, you know, 7-8 billion. So what am I going to do? Well, how do I keep my costs down? Because these guys want a green model, which you saw the incentives kind of went out on the solars, right? They ended what 2022 or 21. And that said, we're going to look at buying some manufacturers possibly because acquiring those manufacturers would give us a control of costs to help offset some of our start to finish model. What I mean by that is we're bringing the power. We have the offtake agreements for so many years that we can blend that together. And in the state we're in, they don't want it, you know, they want it green. They don't want, you know, the coal and they don't want the other sources of energy. So we're finding a solution, but it has to make economic sense. So the cost of solar compared to gas, right, is a big difference in number. I know it's getting better and better. And you could tell everyone, all the listeners, you know the exact details of that. And but that was one example of acquisition made sense for us. We're going to go buy manufacturers. Yeah,
that vertical integration is perfect because, again, not only do you get to control your costs of your project, but you also should pick up a secondary revenue stream because other people, they would be selling their product to other solar companies doing smaller projects. So there would still be a revenue stream that they should be self-sustainable and they should fund themselves through their other acquisitions, even if you take the manufacturing at cost for your other project.
Exactly. I mean, it's a win-win, right?
Yeah.
You make it you get the deal. So creative acquisitions, I would say, is a great idea, but it needs to make sense because for some of the small business listeners, this is some of my, I just had some thoughts of my past. Some of the problems with acquisitions is adaptability. You know, when I say adaptability is they already have a culture. You got to think about this. If you're trying to buy them, you're trying to push your culture onto them. That is sometimes a feat in itself. So you have to look at that side of it. So what I would say in an acquisition is you can't look at the numbers only. You have to really focus on the leadership, eliminating a lot of their staff, which usually happens because you cut costs on operations is one reason you do that, do acquisitions or mergers. So that would be something I'd ask your listeners to look at as well, is really dive into there's no numbers behind that. It is a element that we like to underwrite is going to be a good fit in relationships. Because you buy somebody, you're acquiring usually the whole team involved, right? The whole staff, you know, and it's hard to just fire everybody and bring it over and just take on clients because clients signed up with them for a reason. Right.
Exactly. Well, I got to tell you, this has been a fantastic time. I love that you're here, that you're helping us out and listen, and our listeners are getting these giant nuggets in the stream. So one of the things, too, is that I want to tell all of my listeners right now, if you're listening to the sound of our voice out there today, is that everything we've talked about, you know, one of the things that we've talked about here on the show a lot is there are two types of people. There are people that work on a watch that are called watchmakers, and there are fools, people that try and work on a watch. So we always want to go out and seek, qualified advice. And that's why we try and bring you really, really good guests. So my guest today is Charles Carey. He is the founder, CEO of the CIG Capital Group. Fantastic organization. They fund everything from 20 million or all the way up to high billions of dollars in projects. And it's very project specific what CIG does. They're not just funding the company, they're funding specific projects within the company. So he's a good guy to know. Now his website is, of course, www.cigcap.com. Now, because they're the actual signatory on the loan or on the funding, they bring the the capital to bear, they work through brokers. So if you don't have a broker, that would be a way that I was telling you about, that watchmaker type of thing. Find an expert. And the experts that work in this industry are usually called funding brokers. And those brokers, if you don't have one, it's just like having part of your success team. You need a good lawyer. You need a good, you know, bookkeeper or a accountant or a CPA. You need a good broker. You need a good broker. And the reason why is because that expertise and that personal relationship gets you to the next level, which means you have somebody as an entrepreneur, as a CEO, as a founder or working. You have built a goal that says, my goal is whatever it is. It's I want to make $1 billion. Okay, that's not a goal. That's just a dream. So here's how we're going to get there. And part of the process could be, you know, funding through through companies like CIG Cap. So what you might want to do is talk to that broker and say, here's, until you're ready, here's what you need to do. You need to get to $1 million in sales. You need to have, you know, 3 years under your belt, whatever it happens to be. But by working with that broker, you can then have a better understanding of what the next influx of cash is going to be. Where are we going to get that next influx? And what are we going to do with it? Now, not a, you know, you're going to have to pay. The debt has a service. You have to service the debt. So you have to be able to do X number of things greater than the service of the debt, which is how banks make their money. Of course, we talk about that all the time here. But that's why CIG Capital is a good number to have. So my guest today, Charles Carey, the founder and CEO, has graciously offered that if you go to his website, which is cigcap.com, you can go there, go to the contact page. There's a email place. There's a toll-free number. You can call and actually talk to his office staff and his team, and they will give you a list of brokers that are available in your particular area or in your particular industry. And this is really important because you need this person in your success team. You need to have this person around you somewhere. Am I even close to saying that the right way, Charles, or am I way off base?
Scott, you're right on. This is such a great point. You know, we deal with lawyers all the time. We deal with, investment banking groups so much. And I always say, if you have an agent that cares about your business, is not just trying to make a sale, and that is so crucial, because it's like one of part of your executive team, exactly how Scott said it. You need that person to help you. We can take deals direct. Usually only with governments and larger infrastructure deals we'll get involved, but we want someone on your side that's going to look out for your interests. And the good news is the way we work our model is that broker has to learn our product. So they will understand it in and out. And when they come to us, and typically they're trained already, they're the brokers that want to give you the best advice, and we may not be a good fit. And that's where it's, you know, we're in a position to say, don't look at, you know, every capital source, because they might not be a good fit. That's that simple. So I like the broker model that we have, and because it gives the client, which I think at the end of the day, it matters more than anything, the right direction. Is as long as the broker has the best interest, make them part of your team. And again, just like what Scott said earlier, and I said myself, don't count the pennies to step over the dollars. That means don't worry about your broker fee. You have to pay that fee. Most of these guys work hard and spend time and work through the deal. Ask us questions to help solve the problem for you. So,
right. I agree. So we talk about this all the time on Mind Your Own Business. Profit is not a dirty word. Everybody needs to make a profit, because that's how you employ people. And you employ people because you pay them X and then you get X plus for their services. They're absolutely, the one thing I tell people all the time is, do you want to spend 16 hours learning a new software program, or do you want somebody to come in and just set it up for you? You know, and it saves 60. So one of the things that I love about you, and I'm going to tell you guys, Charles and I have known each other for quite a long time. And one of the mantras that I love is he has the three R's. Why don't you share with us the three R's about what that means for you and your business? But basically, it's a personal mantra. So why don't you talk a little bit about the three R's as we wrap up today?
That's perfect. Thanks, Scott. I would tell you the one word, if I describe my favorite word, you know, other than love, I would say balance in business. In business, I believe balance in life as well, of course. And so I came with these three R's because what we do as entrepreneurs, and you heard it earlier, you work 40 hours at a normal job and then you become an entrepreneur, you work 80 hours, right? And we neglect the things in life, such as family, enjoyment of life, a lot of times, right? So I came up with these three R's so I can measure decisions that I make. The first R is where everyone's heard us, return on your investment. So we get tons of leads, we get tons of business, and we don't, I always tell people, we don't need new business, we want new business. So when we look at businesses that make more sense for them and ourselves, we're gonna invest in them, because we believe they're going to be a great return for us. That's our model as a business. And I suggest all business to have that with their clients, right? Invest into that business and ultimately you're going to return. It's a sowing reaping model. The second R, so you have return on your investment. The second R is return on your time. Something that we can never get back in life is called time. When you invest time into something, you need to make sure it's going to give you a return. So that means everything, not just in business, but also in personal life and, you know, everything you do. So for me, I measure that. I, you know, it's hard to say no to your friends, or it's hard to say no to your colleagues. But if you measure each of the time invested to each group, each people you work with and friends, family and colleagues, and you believe in measuring that, you will get a good return on your time. Because, you know, just what you said earlier, don't look at how much profit you're going to make. Look at how much time it's going to take, right? If you focus on the profits and you don't have these three R's focused on, then I believe your success rate goes down. You know, don't chase the, I call it the end of the rainbow. I'm Irish. Don't go after the goal because it's not there, right? Focus on the actual journey that you're going to get there. And it will come. Right. So that's my belief on your time. Invest your time wisely. Don't waste your time on things that don't make sense. It's like hiring a broker, hiring the right team, and be willing to spread that around. The third R is, you know, important. It's return on enjoyment. Return on enjoyment to me is what we miss a lot as entrepreneurs. We miss the time with our children. We miss the time with our spouses. We miss the time on and just enjoying life for ourselves. That is such a problem as an entrepreneur. And so for me, I've had to make myself separate myself from my phones. I have more than one. I separate myself from my gadget. I just did it this weekend. I flew, did a great dinner. I took some of my friends. We jumped on the jet. We got over. We had a great time. It was a blast. And I didn't do business. I didn't do work, you know, and that's crucial. You have to hang up the phone. Now, times, you know, so those three R's is what helps balance my life out. I think that's where I'm successful, because I've been willing to say no when it didn't measure my time. It wasn't the next deal. It wasn't the next client I needed, because I need the next time with my son to spend time with him, the next time with my daughter to, you know, do a daddy-daughter dance, or a next time to spend with my wife to give her that date night that she deserves versus that big deal I'm going to close tomorrow, right? So when you balance all that, and then most important, get your me time. Us as entrepreneurs, we miss that as well. You have to get some time for yourself where you can just relax, enjoy life, because all it does, it makes you better the next time you go out there and do the next deal, because you're able to balance out your life.
Fantastic advice. Charles Carey, I am so proud and honored to call you not only a friend, but also a colleague. I love your model. I love what you're doing. I'm so thankful for you being on the show. I really, really appreciate you helping our listeners. Remember, like I said, guys, if you are listening to this and you want to go to CIGCAP, SIGCAP.com, you can get on there, the contact page. You can send that information over, and Carey, Charles and his team will get you exactly who you need is a broker to put into your success team, and you should have that person on your in your Rolodex. I know for all of you millennials, you have no idea what that is. Just Google it. Google Rolodex. You'll know what that means. For all of us with gray hair, that, you know. So I want to also touch on what you said too. My father, like I said, was a serial entrepreneur. He taught me a lot. I loved him. Unfortunately, he's passed away now, but I will tell you, one of the things that he told me when I was still a young man, but I was through college, I had started my own career and things, and he said, let me tell you, Scott, what was really important. And he said, I spent more time with my businesses than I did with you. And he said, and that really broke his heart. And he said, at the time, he was operating from fear. He was scared that if he didn't close that next deal, if he didn't, everything was growing and getting faster and getting bigger and getting, you know, all this other stuff. And he was chasing that. And he said, look, at the end of the day, you know, you hold on to your business longer than you need to. You don't give it, you don't pay attention the way you should, because you start a relationship with this business that's even more important than your wife and your kids, because you spend so much time with your nose pressed up against the bark on the tree that you forget that there's a forest there. And he regretted that. I mean, unfortunately, I'm sharing with you a personal story, but I think he had a deep regret, because he said, you know, so many things when, as he was retired and trying to live the good life, you know, he was reaping the rewards. But he said, look, what good does it do to have anything as far as monetary value or anything now if you don't have that relationship with your kids and your wife and your friends? You know, spread that out instead of hoarding the belief that at the end of your life, you're going to have all this time to go, you know, sit on a deck and sip a glass of wine in Italy. Spend that vacation money now and go spend that time with your father-daughter dance or your son, you know, coaching the little league team or whatever, because you're never going to look back on it at the end of your life and go, boy, I wish I'd spent more time at work.
That's a great point.
So anyway, we talk about that all the time on Mind Your Own Business. I love it. The three R's: return on investment, return on your time, because the time you're never going to get back, and return on your enjoyment. Live life now, get in a balance. You have to believe, coming from two people on the radio right now, you just have to listen and you just have to believe and have the faith that next deal, you're not going to lose it because you go to your daughter's father-daughter dance. If you do, it was never yours to have in the first place. So Amen. You just have to operate from that position and not operate from fear. You're not going to lose your business because you spend an extra hour a week taking care of your kids.
Great point.
All right. So, I say it every week. I mean it from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for listening. I couldn't do what I do without you, the listeners. It is just absolutely fantastic that I was able to have Charles with us today. And like I said before, go to thesigcap.com and get connected, and he and his team will find you a broker and work through and help you prepare your business to be ready for that large investment. If you are listening, wherever you're listening to this podcast, however you get your podcast, you can go right straight down to the bottom of the page and simply click like, leave a review, subscribe, whatever you need to do to let us know that you are listening. We appreciate that. If you'd like to leave a review, it's fantastic. But my number one sponsor and the people that I have to talk about every week is Inspired News Radio. InspiredNewsRadio.com. If you haven't been there, I encourage you to go. It's a platform that is all about positive programs that are delivered to the world, specifically designed to inspire, inform, educate, and motivate. That's one place you can go. I happen to be a show host there. I do a couple of shows a week right there on that platform. Go to inspirednewsradio.com, click on my smiling face, and you'll see this episode right here with me and Charles. There'll be a picture of both of us, and there'll be some information and all the show notes, so you can get a hold of his links, his contact information, all that stuff. It'll be right there where you can get a hold of us. And if you feel so inspired, leave a review. Tell us what you like or don't like about the show, because trust me when I tell you, Kerry gave up his time and I do it every week simply because we want to make you better at being a sales professional, being an entrepreneur, helping you to make your life better. And the advice we give and the things we talk about are simply just to help We're just giving back. That's the only reason we do it. I say it every week, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. Mind your own business, because nobody else is going to.
You've been listening to Mind Your Own Business, right here on InspiredNewsRadio.com. Thanks for tuning in each week as we interview some of the greatest CEOs and entrepreneurs in the world. You can reach us on Twitter at INR Talk Radio. Always use the hashtag MYOB for Mind Your Own Business. Make sure you stop by and check out all of the past episodes and all the great things that are available on our website, www.inspirednewsradio.com. There's great resources there that you can find for all of our other shows, too. Thanks for being a part of the Inspired News Radio family. Until next week, remember to mind your own business.